Something from yesterday's class. Who remembers something from yesterday's class? Remember, as opposed to just look in the book or look in your notes. Who remembers something from yesterday's class? Ali?
Wealth is more bewildering than beauty, high birth, or being learned.
Why?
Because it creates attachment to wine, women, and gambling.
Yes, but what is it specifically about wealth?
Power.
Yes. Wealth is shakti. It's power. And if you have wealth, it doesn't make a difference if you are beautiful. It doesn't make a difference if you are learned. It doesn't make a difference if you come from a good family. You will be able to enjoy if you have wealth. So this is the great strength of wealth. It's no accident that Kali was given shelter in gold. Because wherever gold is present, wherever there is wealth present, there's such a strong tendency towards material enjoyment. Because one feels oneself powerful. And therefore, sadhus tend to keep themselves, unless one has specific mission on behalf of the Lord, they will tend to keep themselves in a poverty-stricken condition. This is going to be described as we go on further. Anyone remember anything else? And what's the conclusion about this seeming contradictory points?
Verse 4 is more interesting to me. It says that the beautiful form of
But you brought up two points that are in counterposition to each other. What's the reconciliation?
The deepest material suffering is that we are separated from Krishna.
I'm sorry, the
deepest material suffering. Yes.
But actually, Jiva Goswami speaks directly on this point. Is it that a devotee doesn't want, when we say that a devotee, or Mahaprabhu even says, Janmini Janmini Shore Bhavata Bhakti Rai Tiki, does that mean everyone has to want to stay in the material world? And actually, one time I saw Satyadananda Prabhu yesterday, and he reminded me that one time in Japan, Prabhupada had given a lecture, and at the end of the lecture, Prabhupada had spoken in the lecture that we should want to go back to God, back home, back to Godhead. So I, in a cute way, not a very serious way, I said, Prabhupada, we don't want to go back to Godhead. We just want to serve you. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada was very grave, actually, in his reply. And Satyadananda Prabhu reminded me. He said, don't make me come back to accept your service. So there is a healthy not wishing to go back to Godhead and only wish to serve. And there is an unhealthy one. One is more or less frivolous and cute, forgetting how difficult the material world is. It's sentiment. And the problem with sentiment or sentimentality, sentiment is part of Krishna consciousness, but sentimentality means that one cannot live, one's realizations do not match one's sentiments. So therefore, when we have a sentiment for something, and then when the winds of change move, our sentiment also changes. Then it is sentimental. It is not deep. So Jiva Goswami specifically says that a devotee also wants to go back to Godhead, or he wants to be free from the material world. But there is a difference in emphasis in his consciousness between a jnani or a person who is suffering. And what is in his mind what is dominant or predominant in his mind is that he wants to get out of here. He wants to get out of the material world, and he wants to end the suffering of the material world. So the center of his consciousness has not shifted from himself or his false sense of self. He wants to end the false sense of self to such a degree that very often they're willing to give up their individuality, their sense of self, because their sense of self means suffering to them. So a devotee doesn't wish to suffer, but a devotee's emphasis, what's dominating his consciousness, is the desire to serve, not the desire to escape from suffering. So there's that a subtle difference. So which are we? That we have to answer for ourselves. Are we mostly wanting to end the suffering, or are we mostly wanting to serve? Devotional service influenced by the mode of ignorance leaves one very angry as one serves. Devotional service influenced by the mode of passion leaves one filled with many desires. And devotional service influenced by the mode of goodness is influenced by the tendency towards liberation. And transcendental devotional service is anyabhilasita sunyam. It is dominated fully by the desire to please Krishna. Anukulena Krishna anushilanam. Activities meant for Krishna's pleasure. So there's a difference. A difference. Okay, where should we begin today? What verse? 16, yes? Or 15, is it? Seems to be a difference. Opinion. 16 or 15? I think it's, I have it as 15 actually. Yes. So Narada is continuing his thinking and deciding, he's analyzed the consciousness of these two wealthy young persons, these yakshas, sons of Kuvera. Their names were what? Manigriva and Nalakuvera. So he's analyzed their consciousness and he sees the fault that so many fall into who are born into wealthy families. They become very frivolous and use their wealth. There is a t-shirt that you see in the West. My father is an ATM machine. Which means my father's purpose, his existence, is to supply the money so I can enjoy. But a poverty-stricken man must automatically undergo austerities and penances because he does not have the wealth to possess anything. You see that youth tends to be frivolous, while in a poorer situation, they tend to have to work and are forced to adopt the occupation of their parents very often. They don't feel like they have a choice because they have to. Food has to come, rent has to be paid. And they grow very often very maturely because of this, because of the responsibilities. The difference is responsibility or irresponsibility, and there's a tendency for irresponsibility, Narada is thinking, to take over the consciousness of a person like the sons of Kuvera who are wealthy. And this is what he often puts the word irresponsible, and then what does he place after it? An irresponsible life of sense gratification. That means not properly using, responsibly using one's life for its actual purpose. Thus, the verse continues, Narada Muni continues, his false prestige is vanquished. What does false prestige mean? Those two words go together in Hare Krishna talk. False prestige, because we are actually very tiny, we are actually insignificant, and we falsely, in illusion, think of ourself as very important. This is the gift of false ego, false prestige, pride, false pride. Why is it false? Because we're insignificant, we're 1/10,000th the head of a hair. But think, consider, how many people 200 years from now, probably even 100 years from now, how many people will even know that we existed in thinking of this as ourself? How many people will even know what to speak of care? We have, who remembers their grandparents here in this room? But how do we care about them? They're long gone already. We don't care about them. And the next generation, the next generation don't even know or care that they existed. So that's how long? And how long will it be before we pass into that category of the departed forefathers that no one even cares that they ever existed? So our sense of importance, sense of I am very important, prestigious sense of self, is false. It will be vanquished, it will be crushed into fine powder as time continues its relentless moving forward. So that false sense of self for a poor person who is in need of food, shelter, and clothing, he must be satisfied with what is obtained by the mercy of Providence. Undergoing such compulsory austerities is good for him. No one thinks that poverty is good for them. And even Prabhupada said, when he passed through, maybe 40 years ago, almost 35 years ago, he passed through Thailand. And at that time, Thailand was a poor country, or thought of as poor. And Prabhupada even said that this country is too poor to take to Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada also said, poverty brings out the worst qualities in a man. But aside from what it does to one's consciousness in that sense, makes one focused only on the necessities of life and removing poverty, it purifies one and completely frees one from false ego. Very few people can digest poverty and use it to give energy to spiritual life. Very few can do that. Poverty brings out dependence on Krishna. Very few people can digest poverty. Rather, it rumbles in their stomach, and rather, the tendency is to try to remove it. Always hungry, longing for sufficient food, a poverty-stricken man gradually becomes weaker and weaker. This is extreme poverty. Having no extra potency or power, energy, his senses are automatically pacified, peaceful, because he can't engage in sense enjoyment, because sense enjoyment, rather than bringing us happiness, it increases our desires for sense enjoyment, which brings, because our, say if we have 10 desires we want to have fulfilled, and we try to fulfill those, then very soon we'll have 100 desires. But our capacity remains the same. But our desires have increased, our capacity remains the same. That means our frustration also increases. So a poverty-stricken man, therefore, is unable to perform harmful, envious activities. In other words, such a man automatically gains the result of austerities and penances adopted voluntarily by saintly persons. So here are the results. That being performing austerities and penances, keeping oneself in a dependent position, a poverty-stricken condition, especially brahmacharis are meant to be in that condition, dependent, not thinking oneself master. So this is an austerity. It keeps one dependent on Krishna, and one finds out if Krishna is actually there to protect. Otherwise, what do we depend on for our protection? It's always wealth. So society nowadays, it's just focused on economic development. And the result of that type of a focusing is pride. And as Prabhupada points out, in people are more proud, and proud of being proud too. So Prabhupada explains in the last two sentences of his purport to 16. In this age of Kali, a human civilization is so misled, that people are unnecessarily increasing in economic development. And as a result, and this is what people out and out say that the purpose of society is, it's increased economic development, but the result isn't increased happiness. Rather, they're opening more and more slaughterhouses, liquor shops, and brothels. In this way, the whole civilization is being spoiled. The whole purpose of life is being misdirected. And people, amazingly enough, are not becoming happier despite their increase in economic prosperity. And no one will say this, but people aren't happier by their increase in sense gratification. Rather, it's clear, it's actually obvious that people are becoming more and more miserable and more poverty-stricken, more and more in debt. It is not working. Piety makes one happy, not impiety and not sense gratification. Narada continues. Saintly persons may... Here's another positive aspect of being poorer, or poverty-stricken. Saintly persons may freely associate with those who are poverty-stricken, but not with those who are rich. Why? Excuse me? Yes. Now everyone has a security system. But why do people have security systems?
Protect their money.
And what's one step more abstract? Fear. So when you have something that's temporary, the wise person doesn't try to enjoy it because it causes fear and anxiety. If someone said to you, I will give you something, and when you have it, it will cause you anxiety, and when you don't have it, it will cause you anxiety, who would take such a thing? But that is what material wealth does. When we have it, we fear of losing it, and when we lose it, we only want it. So saintly persons may freely associate with those who are poverty-stricken. They can open their houses easily. They're not worried. But not with those who are rich, wealthy. A poverty-stricken man, by association with saintly persons, very soon becomes uninterested in material desires, and the dirty things within the core of his heart are cleansed away. We'll read Prabhupada's purport to 17. It is said, Mahad vichalanam nuinam grihinam dinachetasam. The only business of a saintly person or sannyasi, a person in the renounced order, is to preach Krishna consciousness. Sadhus, saintly persons, want to preach both the poor and the rich, but the poor take more advantage of the sadhus' preaching, than the rich do. There's one time Prabhupada was asked, if we give you a temple, he was speaking to some official in the United States, if we give you, Prabhupada was asking for a place for a temple, and he said, if you had the facilities, you'll put up your facility in the poor part of town and help the poor people. And Prabhupada replied, with a surprising vision, he said, do you think it's only the poor people that are suffering? And this is the reality. This is the reality. A poor man receives sadhus very quickly, offers them obeisances, and tries to take advantage of their presence, whereas a rich man keeps a big greyhound dog at his door. I once saw a greyhound dog on the door of a rich house of a rich man, and its back was like this. This wasn't even the head part, even. It was so frightening, actually, because these. No, it wasn't a greyhound. It was a Doberman. A Doberman Pinscher. It was a Great Dane. It was all these in one. I can't remember what it was now because I got out of there as quickly as I could. But it was so big. And it had the tendency, and these dogs, I know a little bit, they have the tendency at some time or another, they can turn on their masters too. Because they're dogs only, after all. So I didn't feel comfortable with him, but he was huge, specially bred to be huge and cause terror. So he has a big greyhound dog at his door, so no one can enter his house. He posts a sign saying, beware of dog. Or in the United States, I've seen signs that says beware of dog. But be more beware of the master. And there's a picture of a man, a gun barrel. And avoids the association of saintly persons, whereas a poor man keeps his door open for them and thus benefits by their association more than a rich man does. So what is the benefit of the association that's in the verse? He becomes, so that's not what a wealthy man wants. He doesn't want to become disinterested in material desires because his wealth, carefully protected wealth, is to fulfill his material desires. Because Narada Muni in his previous life was the poverty-stricken son of a maidservant who didn't even know who his father was, he got the association of saintly persons and later became the exalted Narada Muni. This was his actual experience. Therefore, he is now comparing the position of a poor man with that of a rich man. Satam prasangam mama virasam vido bhavanti ritkana rasayana kita tajosanarasu apavargavatmani shradaratim bhaktiranukramishiti. So now the second step, what is the benefit of that association? If one gets the advantage of association with saintly persons by their instructions, one becomes more and more purified of material desires. Bahir Krishna Bahimukahaya Bhogavan Jakari Nikatastamaya Tare Japatiya Dare. Material life means that one forgets Krishna and that one increases in one's desires for sense gratification. But if one receives the advantage of instructions from saintly persons, so three steps, one, association, benefit of being poverty-stricken, second, satam prasangam amavirya samvido, hearing, and then third, removal of material desires by the process of hearing and taking instructions from saintly persons, and then one is by definition purified. Cheto dorpana marjanam bhava mahadvagni navaparam. And then Prabhupada's last sentence is important. Unless the core of a materialistic person's heart is purified, he cannot get rid of the pangs of bhava mahadvagni, the blazing fire of material existence. In other words, what does that sentence mean? What does it mean? What is the core of a materialistic person's heart?
Self-identification.
Yeah. False ego. In other words, really, unless one understands, accepts and understands that one is a servant of Krishna, this is at the core of the heart, then one will not be able to give up the tendency to enjoy, to look on the material world as a place of enjoyment. And therefore, even if one goes to the forest, and even if one performs great austerities, that tendency to, as soon as one is presented with an opportunity for sense enjoyment, to fall for that is very strongly present until one actually, to the core of one's existence, becomes a servant of Sri Guru Vaishnava, Bhagavata Gita. Bhagavat and the Gita. Saintly persons, and here is saintly persons think of Krishna 24 hours a day. So sadunam sama chitanam mukunda charana eshinam, whose only business, saintly persons, sama, they're equal to everyone, sama chitanam, they're equally disposed towards everyone and everything, but mukunda charana eshinam, their only business is to serve Mukunda, the feet of Mukunda. So look how Prabhupada took that. Their only business is to serve Mukunda. Mukunda Charana, to be situated at the lotus feet of Mukunda. And he translated it as, they think of Krishna 24 hours a day. They have no other interest. Because they are situated as servants at Krishna's lotus feet, they're always thinking of pleasing their master. They don't imagine themselves falsely in the center of existence. This is the great change. The great change that is required in our consciousness. To change from being a materialist to a spiritualist, it has to go that deep, to this point, to this core, to the point of surrender. I am Krishna's. And the great benefit of thinking in terms of I am Krishna's is that Krishna becomes ours. We belong to Krishna. And therefore we're in his realm of protected individuals. So these saintly persons, sadunam samachitanam mukunda charana ishanam upekshai kim danastambai asadbir asat asraya. Why should people neglect the association of such exalted spiritual personalities and try to associate with materialists, taking shelter of non-devotees, most of whom are proud and rich? Why? The question is asked, and what's the answer? So the answer, why should people neglect the association of such exalted spiritual personalities and try to associate with materialists, is because they fit in our plan. Materialists fit in our plans for enjoyment, material enjoyment. And spiritualist, though he's not speaking really about devotees here, but these non-devotional tendencies may be somewhat present. So Prabhupada therefore explains in its purport, why should the rich, instead of associating with sadhus, waste their valuable time in association with other rich men who are averse to spiritual life? But the poor man and the rich man can take advantage of the Krishna consciousness movement. And here it is advised that everyone do so. There was no profit in avoiding the association of the members of the Krishna consciousness movement, because if we don't associate with devotees, we will be forced by the tendency to require friendship. Being social by nature, will be forced to associate with non-devotees. Prabhupada also told me this, that if we don't make friendship with the devotees, we'll be forced by the social nature of being human beings to make friendship with non-devotees. And then he said, if we associate with, make friendship with non-devotees, we will not be able to follow the principles. So therefore, asatsang tyag evaishnava char. And then again, Prabhupada says at the end, therefore one should not avoid the association of Vaishnavas, which is now available all over the world in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. What do you think about that? That's the first point, that if we are members of the Krishna consciousness movement, Prabhupada is putting forward us as sadhus, who to the core of the heart have been purified. So therefore that puts a lot of pressure on us to come up to an extremely high standard. Therefore, he's reaching his conclusion now, since these two persons, drunk with the liquor named Varuni or Madhvi, and unable to control their senses, have been blinded by the pride of celestial opulence, and they wouldn't even cover their bodies in the presence of Narada Muni. How arrogant. And have become attached to women, I shall relieve them of their false prestige. It's a burden that people usually don't want to be relieved of. Purport. When a sadhu chastises or punishes someone, he does not do so for revenge. Maharaj Prickett had inquired why Narada Muni was subject to such a spirit of revenge, tama. But this was not tama. For Narada Muni, in full knowledge of what was good for the two brothers, wisely thought of how to cure them. So that was the question that Prickett Maharaj asked. Why did Narada curse them? Vaishnavas are good physicians. They know how to protect a person from material disease. Thus they are never in tamagun, not anger. Sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. Vaishnavas are always situated on the transcendental platform, the Brahman platform. They cannot be subject to mistakes or the influence of the modes of material nature. Whatever they do, after full consideration, is meant just to lead everyone back home, back to Godhead. Now here comes his blessing, which appears very much like a curse. This was after considering what was their fault, their pride, their material opulence, and because of that they were losing, practically speaking, the chance of their life, this life demigod, next life worm. And therefore, Narada Muni's blessing is a curse. These two young men, Nalakuvera and Manigriva, are by fortune the sons of the great demigod Kuvera. But because of false prestige and madness after drinking liquor, they are so fallen that they are naked but cannot understand that they are. Therefore, because they are living like trees, for trees are naked but are not conscious, these two young men should receive the bodies of trees. That will be proper punishment. So to go into a body of a tree is very heavy. Someone wants to cut you. You cannot, someone wants to saw off your arm and you can't even complain. We can't, if someone pushes us or steps on us or something, there's a tendency for our false ego to become riled. But when you're a tree, someone will cut off your arm and you cannot protest. Animals, when you try to harm them, they'll cry or try to run away, but a tree can't even run away. They just have to accept the heat, the cold, however anyone treats them. If someone wants their bark for medicine or cinnamon or something, they just have to give it up. They have no choice. So that removes this sense, how dare you do this to me? You will find out who I am. You will understand my power. No, gone. You just have to accept everything, anything anyone does to you. You simply have to accept it. You get fed water, you have to accept it. You get no water, you have to accept it. And then people come and take shelter of you. They take your fruits. You have to accept it. People cut your... You see in Vrindavan, in the West, they use chainsaws when they want to remove the... But here they tie ropes onto the limbs of the tree, and then they just pull and pull and pull the branches until they fall off. Imagine someone doing that to your arm. And they just have no choice. They have to accept it. That whole sense of how dare you do this to me. False prestige, gone. So these two young men should receive the body of trees. This will be proper punishment. Nonetheless, after they become trees, and until they are released by my mercy, they will have remembrance of their past sinful activities. So they'll know why they are suffering. Moreover, by my special favor, so here is one blessing to know why we are suffering. After the expiry of 100 years by the measurement of the demigods, they will be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, face to face, and thus revive their real position as devotees. So there was one curse, two blessings. First blessing, you'll be able to remember. So why doesn't Krishna give all of us that blessing? Has anyone ever expressed that to you? Remember, people will have perhaps a difficulty in accepting that we're eternal souls transmigrating from body to body. But if we all remembered our previous bodies, then it would be easy to be philosophical about life, about the sufferings of life, and understand that there is a goal in life. Make sense? And why doesn't Krishna allow us to remember our previous bodies and understand thereby why we're suffering? But yes, this is a big part of my understanding. But just imagine also, but not only a dog, that was only one life, but countless other lives, how you've ripped apart animals, attacked them with your teeth, and pulled out their intestines. Imagine if you had to be aware of that. But that's only one thing. But imagine the activity. Imagine if you had been a worm in stool, and you have to think about what that's like. Imagine if you've been a bird and being attacked by a hawk, or a pig in the gutters eating this and that horrible things. And this is 8,400,000 different species, countlessly. So that's one reason why Krishna doesn't allow it.
Another reason might be that even in this lifetime, we do remember so many things we are worthy to be punished for, but we still do not want to accept that we are liable for punishment for these acts of ours. We still reject so many things.
But the answer to that one would be, if you say, then give me a chance, I'll decide whether I want to accept my responsibility, but you don't even give me the chance. You're Adi Purusha. You should give me the chance. And you don't. You just say...
It's already we can already see that we don't want this chance, because even in this lifetime we reject. We say, no, I was actually justified. I'm innocent. Even though everybody around.
I'm talking about remembering that past lives. Therefore, I'd be much more careful about what I do in this life if I could only remember my past lives. And that's a problem with that. Well, I'll just say one other reason is that if we understood everything we would had done, everything suffering now, and if we were confronted with all the pain that we've caused in previous lives and all the things we've done and all the improper activities, that would increase our pain to such a degree. All we could think of is pain. And in addition to that, what would be the question in such a pain condition of wanting to develop love? We would only be able to want liberation. We would only be able to want to get out. And Krishna has a different plan, something much more positive. Okay, let's go on. So he's given them a benediction, and they can remember, which is a kind of blessing for them. They remember what they did in that one life that's caused them to take their birth at trees. But even more than that, they have a very special blessing that they're in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. And that's where they grow. For how long? 100 celestial trees, years. These are very old trees. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Having thus spoken, the great saint Devarshi Narada returned to his ashram, known as Narayana Ashram, and Nalakuvera and Manigriva became twin Arjuna trees. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is a twin tree? What do we mean when we say a twin tree? Does it mean that they look just the same? What does it mean, a twin tree? They have a common trunk. They're born out of the same, like that. Something like Krishna Balaram tree.
They were standing independently, because otherwise how would Krishna get between them?
Common root
then, or he could have climbed over the common part. But that's what a twin, you see that around.
Yeah.
They're bound by their karma to be together in that way. So then, Supreme Personality of... So where... Now, okay, we've entered into a different realm, the realm of the demigods. And now back to the realm of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in where? In Gokul. So the Supreme Person... And what has happened to that Supreme Personality of Godhead? He was bound by whom? Mother Yasoda. And you know what he did? What did he do? He was bound up, and Mother Yasoda was there. And then she said she left him. And you know what he did? I will show you. You think I've been mistaken? But first he started crying and rubbing. You left me. Crying. And as soon as Mother Yasoda was away, he started laughing again and playing in his playful mood. Jiva Goswami describes how he started, in between pulling down the trees, all his friends came around him, because Mother Yasoda told all her friends to watch him and stay around him. And Krishna didn't try to untie the rope himself, nor did he ask his friends to untie the rope, but rather he just started pulling the tree, the mortar this way and that way, and he pulled it to the houses of all the ladies who had, when Mother Yasoda said, please give me some rope in the village, I don't have enough to bind this boy, all the ladies had taken down their ropes. So he went to all their houses and took their butter and fed it to all his friends.
Attached to the mortar.
While he was still attached to the mortar.
It's crazy.
Such a naughty boy. And then Within the line of his gaze came these two trees, and he thought that I should, now is the time when I'll fulfill. They have been watching my pastimes for so long, for as long as I'm here, and now I will fulfill the truthfulness of the words of my devotee Narada Muni. So that's text 24. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, to fulfill the truthfulness of the words of the greatest devotee, Narada, he slowly went to that spot where the twin Arjun trees were standing. Although these two young men are the sons of the very rich Kuvera, and I have nothing to do with them, because he has nothing to do with the demigods. There he is, just a little boy playing in the courtyard with his... Because this is an entrance into this Vrindavan Gokul Leela of demigods, which don't have... Their consciousness is completely different, and we'll hear their prayers. It's interesting how the demigods, very few demigods were able to enter the Vrindavan Leela at all. The demigods who offered the Garbha Stuti, the prayers to Krishna while still in the womb, they were in Mathura. But actually sometimes it describes that the demigods visited. But here these, so he was thinking, I have nothing to do with them. But there was a connection with them, and that was through his devotee, Krishna's devotee Narada. Devarshi Narada is my very dear and affectionate devotee, and therefore because he wanted me to come face to face with them, I must do so for their deliverance. Now this point is the essential, or a essential point in all of the Krishna conscious philosophy, that if we want to get Krishna's mercy, we are conditioned souls. If we want to get Krishna's mercy, to get Krishna to notice us, to give us his mercy, we need his mercy follows the mercy of devotees. Harinya Britsya Vatsyata. Harinya Britsya Vatsyata. But Krishna is so inclined to his devotees that when Narada desired that he give them his mercy, he desired to give them his mercy. Had Narada not desired to give them his mercy, Krishna desired Krishna to do that, Krishna wouldn't have done that. So this is described in Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is required, that Krishna's mercy follows the Vaishnava's mercy. Prabhupada's purport. Nala Kuvera and Manigriva actually had nothing to do with devotional service or seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, for this is not an ordinary opportunity. It is not that because one is very rich or learned or was born in an aristocratic family that one will be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. This is impossible. Because one can ask, what was their qualification? They had just done naughty, nonsensical things. Now how did they somehow become qualified to witness the pastimes of Krishna and actually participate? This was just the mercy of Narada. In this case, because Narada Muni desired that Nala Kuvera and Manigriva see Vasudeva face to face, the Supreme Personality of Godhead wanted to fulfill the words of his very dear devotee, Narada Muni. No one can force him, but he was inclined to do it. He wanted to do it because Narada had said it. He wanted to do it. If one seeks the favor of a devotee instead of directly asking favors from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if one seeks the favor of a devotee instead of directly asking favors from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is very easily successful. Srila Bhaktivedanta Thakur has therefore recommended Vaishnava te kora, tomara ko kora, bulianjana himore. Krishna se tomara, Krishna dite para, tomara chalana nore. One should desire to become like a dog in strictly following a devotee. So that is the quality of a dog that is praised, his loyalty to his master. Krishna is in the hands of a devotee, a dulabhamatma bhakta. Thus, without the favor of a devotee, one cannot directly approach Krishna, or to speak of engaging in his service. Nortama Das Thakur therefore sings, Chadeya Vaishnava Seva Nishtara Payachikeva. Unless one becomes a servant of a pure devotee, one cannot be delivered from the material condition of life. In our Gaudiya Vaishnava society, following in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami, our first business is to seek shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Go Ado Guru Parasraya. Guru Asraya. So Krishna then, having spoken, thought in this way, he soon entered between the two Arjuna trees, and thus the big mortar to which he was bound turned crossways and stuck between them. By dragging behind him with great force the wooden mortar tied to his belly, the boy Krishna, who was just 2 years old, uprooted the two trees, and by the great strength of the Supreme Person, the two trees, with their trunks, leaves, and branches, trembled severely and fell to the ground with a great crash. Kata! Fell to the ground, making such a loud sound because they were huge, huge. They had been there for so long. They had fallen to the ground, and everyone in Braja heard this and was shocked. What is this happening? Purport. This is the pastime of Krishna known as Damodar Lila. Therefore, another of Krishna's names is Damodar, as the Harivamsa. Sachatanaeva namnatur Krishnavai Damabandavat. Goste Damodara iti gopi bi parigiyate. So that. 27, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Simple comment. Damodar uprooted the two trees by very forcefully pulling the mortar with drag behind him. By the tremendous power, Parama Vikramita, of Krishna, the two trees with their trunks, leaves, and branches trembled severely and fell to the ground. According to the Harivamsa, Krishna is called Damodar because of being bound up. And then that verse he quotes. Thereafter, in that very place where the two Arjuna trees had fallen, two great perfect personalities who appeared like fire personified came out of the two trees, the effulgence of their beauty illuminating all directions. With bowed heads they offered obeisances to Krishna, and with hands folded they spoke the following. So now there are 10 prayers of the words of Manigriva and Nalakuvera, and what their realizations were after having engaged improperly in irresponsible sense gratification, having been cursed by Narada, and having been trees for so long, and then having witnessed Krishna's pastimes, and then the trees falling down by Krishna's power, and them coming, and now they were face to face with the most beautiful boy, the cutest Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what are their realizations? Here's the first thing they say. And they're going to say that Krishna, because there again, these prayers will be similar to the prayers in the Garbha Stuti, because those were delivered by demigods, and these living beings are like demigods. They're the sons of Kuvera, the demigod. So they have that perspective, but they have an additional perspective too, because they've seen Krishna's lila. So they say how Krishna is the cause of everything, and they recognize that He, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything comes from Him. Now what is, in one sense, what is relevant about these type of prayers which will glorify Krishna from the point of view of the demigods, in other words, glorify His opulence and power? What is relevant? What was the last lila that we just saw?
Yashoda was able to do anything with Krishna.
Yeah.
And this same Krishna is glorified by the demigods.
Yes. And she bound him up and she made him cry. And he was afraid of her, actually not acting, but actually afraid of her. So here, we're immediately reminded, immediately after that lila is over, so we don't think that Krishna is an ordinary boy or that Braja is ordinary. We're immediately reminded by Nalakovera Manigriva of who this boy is, which makes his dealings with Mother Yasoda still more special and fantastic. And then we again will wonder about what is the power of the Brijvasis. And especially now we are being reminded, because what happens after the demigods gave their prayers earlier? What immediately happened? Krishna took birth. And then what happened? Then Vasudeva and Devaki offered prayers. And then what happened? He immediately left Mathura. We're first reminded, we see that he's the Supreme Lord. And then he leaves Mathura and goes to Vrindavan and starts his pastimes. And now, the next thing that's going to happen, after these demigods offer their prayers, is that Krishna is actually going to enter the Vrindavan forest. Because they're going to leave Gokul. Vrindavanam Govardhanam Yamuna Puranani Cha Vischa Chid Paramapriti Rama Mandalayor Nripa. That Krishna's going to enter in Vrindavan. And for the first time, because they're in Gokul, they're in Mahavan, they're on the other side of the Yamuna. And they enter Vrindavan. And soon as Krishna saw three things, he felt paramapriti, the greatest attraction, the greatest happiness. Those three things were Vrindavanam, Govardhanam, Yamuna, Pulunani. He saw the land of Vrindavan, which means the dust of Vrindavan. And then he saw Govardhan, Giriraj Govardhan. And then he saw the Yamuna. And he became filled with such happiness. These were the places where his most intimate pastimes took place. This is the forest of Vrindavan. So, we don't enter today, but I think in the next class we enter Vrindavan. Oh, Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna. Your opulent mysticism is inconceivable. It's inconceivable. He's crawling around in the dust of Gokul. And he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-powerful one. You are the supreme original person, the cause of all causes, immediate and remote, that which can be seen. You are the Adya Purusha Para, that which can be seen. Just like there's the immediate cause, just like if I drop this, there'll be a sound. Now, to make it easier, I'll drop it on here. So the immediate cause of the sound was the garland. And the more remote cause of the sound was my hand. And the still more remote cause of the sound was the desire I had to make an example of something. So there's the immediate causes that we can see, and there's the remote causes that we don't see. So Krishna is the cause of all causes, the immediate and the remote causes. He's behind everything, sarva karana karanam. And you are beyond the material creation. Learned brahmanas know on the basis of Vedic statements, sarvam kalavedam brahma, that you are everything. And there he is, this little boy, effulgent and beautiful. And that this cosmic manifestation in its gross and subtle aspects is your form. Now they admitted, Prabhupada explains in the purport, they understood the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada, there's a paraphrasing here. That we should be delivered by the blessings of Narada Muni was all your plan. So behind Narada Muni was Krishna. Therefore, you are the supreme mystic. Everything, past, present, and future, is known to you. Krishna said, I follow Narada Muni. Who inspired Narada Muni? It's Krishna. But yet, when the Shastras, when Shastra deliberates, where does the mercy really come from? Is it ultimately everything coming from Krishna, or is it coming from the devotee? The conclusion of Shastra is that it's coming from the free will of the devotee, despite that there's no difference between the mercy of the Lord and the mercy of the devotee. And as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this in Madhurya Kundamani, Srila Jiva Goswami explains it in Bhakti Sandarbha as well. That there's some independence on the part of the devotee. Therefore, you are the supreme mystic, O Lord. Everything, past, present, and future, is known to you. Your plan was made so nicely that although we stayed here as twin Arjun trees, you have appeared as a small boy to deliver us. This was all your inconceivable arrangement, because you are the Supreme Person. You can do everything. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you are the cause of all causes in that first verse. The controller of everything. You are the supreme controller. You know everything. You are the supreme person. Excuse me. The body, life, ego, senses of every living entity are your own self. There's nothing separate from you in existence. You are the supreme person, Vishnu, the imperishable controller. You are the time factor, the immediate cause. And you are material nature consisting of the three modes of passion, goodness, and ignorance. You are the original cause of this material manifestation. You are the supersoul, and therefore you know everything within the core of the heart of every living entity. Just imagine that Krishna knows everything. He knows everything from within the core of our hearts. We can't hide anything from him. How does that make you feel? I mean, think about it. Can't hide anything from Krishna. He knows everything because he is the Ishvara within the Sarvabhutanam Riddhisthe Arjuna Tishtati. How does that make you feel? Huh?
Ashamed.
It can be quite embarrassing, but also grateful. Even though he knows everything, he stays with us. He doesn't leave us. I mean, our best friends in this world, if they knew everything, they wouldn't. No one would want to stay, hang out with us. No one would want to be our friend anymore. But Krishna, he stays with us, even if we're in the body of a pig or a worm or a monkey or a dog or a cat or a mosquito. He stays with us. This is wonderful. So you are everything and you know everything. Oh Lord, you exist before the creation, and you existed. Since you existed before the creation, therefore we who trapped by a body of material qualities in this material world can understand you, meaning can't understand you. Who, trapped by a body of material qualities in this material world, who can understand you? And the answer, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, that no one can understand Krishna, in fact, because matter cannot understand spirit. It's beyond its limits. If we grew up only in this room and never knew anything outside of the room, and there were heavy curtains, and we never knew anything outside of this room, what could we know of the world? All our experiences would only be limited to what we experience here. So similarly, we cannot know Krishna because our experiences are all of this world. But, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, Krishna reveals himself to those engaged in devotional service. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita by the Lord himself, Bhaktyamam Abhijananti. Even the descriptions of Krishna in Srimad Bhagavatam are sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men with a poor fund of knowledge. Therefore, the best course by which to know him is to engage oneself in pure devotional activities. This is the abhideya. This is the process that brings prema, pure devotional service, not mixed devotional service. The more one advances in devotional activities, the more one can understand him as he is. If from the material platform one could understand Krishna, then, since Krishna is everything, one could understand Krishna by seeing anything within this material world. But that is not possible. He is beyond. So he knows everything, and no one can understand him. He is everything, and no one can understand him. Why can't anyone understand him? Kunti Devi asks the same thing, noting antarbahira vastita, your inside and outside of everything. Why is it so difficult? You're everywhere, but we can't see you anywhere. So in 33, Nalakuvera Manivibha say, O Lord, whose glories are covered by your own energy, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are Shankarshan, the origin of creation. And you are Vasudev, the origin of the Chaturvyuha. Because you are everything, and therefore the Supreme Brahman, we simply offer our respectful obeisances to you. Because we are covered by part of his everything, which is his Maya. Maya Javani Kachanam. The curtain of Maya covers our ability to know him, even though he is the origin of everything. And therefore Prabhupada concludes, because we are covered by the material modes of nature, he is very difficult for us to understand unless he reveals himself to us. Therefore it is better for us to acknowledge that he is everything and offer obeisances unto his lotus feet. We should accept, not try to discover him through an ascending process. Appearing, so even now it talks about the incarnations, his incarnations. So he knows everything, we can't know him, and yet he appears. And what is the nature of his nature when he appears? So these are, one could say, typical prayers from the demigod point of view. They're aware of Krishna's coming to this world, and they're saying that his coming is extraordinary and his body is extraordinary. Even when he comes. So the fact that he has a form when he incarnates doesn't limit his spiritual nature. So appearing in bodies like those of ordinary fish, tortoise, and hog, you exhibit activities impossible for such creatures to perform. Extraordinary, incomparable, transcendental activities of unlimited power and strength. When you're in this material world, you still have your transcendental body, whether it be a hog or a fish or a tortoise or a tiny, little, cute, beautiful baby. You are not like the hog or the tortoise or the fish or the baby of this world. You are completely, unlimitedly powerful at all times. You exhibit activities impossible for such creatures to perform. Extraordinary, incomparable, transcendental activities of unlimited power and strength. These bodies of yours, therefore, are not made of material elements, but are incarnations of your Supreme Personality. You, O little boy Krishna, Vasudev, Kanaya, are the same Supreme Personality of Godhead who have now appeared with full potency for the benefit of all living beings within this world. And what is the benefit? Is they can hear about him and talk about Krishna and gradually develop love for him and serve him. O Supreme Auspicious, we offer our obeisant, respectful obeisances unto you, who are the supreme good. What is the Parama Mangala? That means everything in the word by words, whatever you do is good. This is how good is defined. When Krishna steals, it's good. We've just seen that. But how about when he dances with the gopis, which is just to come after he enters Vrindavan? That is the supreme good. It is transcendental. It has nothing to do with the good and bad of this world. So the demigods are acknowledging the transcendental nature of Krishna's activities. O most famous descendant and controller of the Yadu dynasty, O son of Vasudev, O most peaceful, let us offer our obeisances unto your lotus feet. So their conclusion practically is they should just offer their obeisances to him. Purport. The word Paramakalyana is significant because Krishna and any of his incarnations appears in order to protect the sadhus. Puritranaya sadunam. The sadhus, saintly persons or devotees, are always harassed by non-devotees. And Krishna appears in his incarnations to give them relief. This is his first concern. If we study the history of Krishna's life, we shall find that for the most of his life, he predominantly engaged in killing demons one after another. So, O Lord, we offer you our obeisances, and now they want to present their fortune, and then they'll ask him for a benediction. O Supreme Form, we are always servants of your servants, especially of Narada Muni. Now give us permission to leave for our home. It is by the grace and mercy of Narada Muni that we have been able to see you face to face. What's interesting about that? Yeah. Yes, definitely. But they're realizing. So are they more fortunate when they are trees, or more fortunate when they're freed from the trees' bodies? Now they're leaving than previously. But then again, Krishna's going to leave Gokul anyway. I find that a little interesting, that their desire is to leave immediately. It is by the grace, now give us permission to leave for our home. It is by the grace and mercy of Narada Muni that we have been able to see you face to face. They want to leave immediately because they don't belong in Braja, because they're demigods. They have demigod consciousness. They don't have consciousness like the Brijvasis, like Mother Yasoda, like Nanda, like the boys, the girls, the grass even. So the grass in Vrindavan is more exalted than the greatest of demigods, Lord Brahma, because Lord Brahma is praying to become like the grass of Vrindavan. They cannot stay. They have to leave. Purport. unless delivered or blessed by a devotee, but the emphasis of the verse is glorifying Narada. And their in identity, their identity is servant of the servant. Tavanu chara kinkaro. Vishi asira nugrahat. We have seen you by the mercy of Narada. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschit yattati siddhaye. According to this verse of Bhagavad Gita, there are so many siddhas or yogis who cannot understand Krishna. Instead, they misunderstand him. But if one takes shelter of a devotee descending from the parampara system of Narada, Swayambhu Narada Shambhu, one can then understand who is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this age, many pseudo-incarnations are advertised simply for having exhibited some magical performances. But except for persons who are servants of Narada and other servants of Krishna, no one can understand who is God and who is not. This is confirmed by Narottama Das Thakur. Chadiya Vaishnava Seva Nistara Payeshi Keva. No one is delivered from the material conception of life unless favored by a Vaishnava. Others can never understand, neither by speculation nor by any other bodily or mental gymnastics. One can't understand by one's own power, because one's own power is limited to within the material world, regardless of how powerful one is. But Krishna is something else, something beyond, someone beyond. And now they're going to ask for the benediction. They ask to leave, but they're leaving in wonderful devotional consciousness, and this is what they ask for. Henceforward, may all our words describe your pastimes. May our ears engage in oral reception of your glories. May our hands, legs, and other senses engage in actions pleasing to you. And may our minds always think of your lotus feet. May our heads offer our obeisances to everything within this world, because all things are also your different forms. And may our eyes see the forms of Vaishnavas who are none different from you. Purport. Here, the process of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead is given. The process is bhakti. Shravanam kirtanam Vishnu smaranam parasevanam archanam vandanam dasyam sakyam atmanavedanam. Everything should be engaged in the service of the Lord. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. Everything, the mind, the body, and all the sense organs should be engaged in Krishna's service. This is to be learned from expert devotees like Narada, Swayambhu, and Shambhu. Who is Swayambhu?
Brahma.
Excuse me?
Brahma.
And Shambhu?
She.
This is the process. We cannot manufacture our own way of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for it is not that everything one manufactures or concocts will lead to understanding God. Such a proposition, yatamata tatapata, is foolish. Krishna says, bhaktyaham ekaya graya. Only by executing the activities of bhakti can one understand me. This is called anukulena Krishna anushilanam, remaining engaged favorably in the service of the Lord. And we'll read the comment of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, 38. Short comment. Since we are your followers and Narada's servants, you should be very merciful to us. We now pray for something rarely given to others. May our words always be engaged in describing your qualities and nothing else. May our minds always remember your beautiful lotus feet. And may our heads pay respects to everything within this world, and especially to devotees such as Narada. Taking the phrase, Nivas Jagat, as vocative, it can mean, O abode of the universe, Jagat Nivas. May our eyes be engaged in seeing your forms and those of your devotees, such as Narada. So after the break, we'll continue a bit. Any questions? Oh no, yes, we'll hear Krishna's words then. Krishna's reply to them. Are there any questions or comments? Thank you. Is it correctable?
Well, is it a correct understanding that because we don't have any desires, we don't put in any desires into our devotional service, it becomes dry?
It certainly can. But may I make a suggestion about what to do about that? And we will borrow the example that we see many times on the roads, on the road from Delhi to Mathura. We see the man riding on his bicycle, taking so long to get from one place to another. And then he sees a speeding truck. And he just holds on to that truck, and his capacity to move along the road with no effort increases automatically so many times. So what that analogy leads us to understand is that if we enter deeply into the prayers of those who are speeding along and enter into their spirit and somehow hold on to them and their prayers, then our speed can increase far beyond our meager capacity of bicycling along down the road. But it takes a true entering into the spirit to get their speed. Because we can superficially read the prayers, like we superficially chant, like we superficially do everything, and then we'll end up with superficial results, dry results, as you put it, which makes us look towards matter for satisfaction. But this methodology is the recommended methodology. We enter, we study, and enter into the spirit, the moods of the exalted personalities, and try to move beyond our capacity. If we don't do that, and if we stay at our capacity, I mean, people do walk from Delhi too. You see them sometimes when they're coming with the Ganga water going down. They walk from far places all the way to wherever they walk, I'm not sure. Those people in Saffron, you've seen them. You can do that, but it will take more time. But this is the recommended method. We enter into the prayers. So what does it mean to enter into the prayers? It means to enter into the spirit and the mood with which it takes the understanding that they have. So we can gain so much in that way. So does that respond to you? Now why don't you take, for the sake of pushing it forward, take the other side, the yeah but side. That may be true, but if you want to.
So, asking for material things is not recommended. In any case.
No, not in any case. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogini ajaita purusha apura. So if you have to ask for material things, then ask the right place. Ask Krishna for material things. But we don't want to end up like Dhruva Maharaj, having been, their curse, Manigriva's curse was a blessing. And Dhruva's blessing was a curse. Because he had to go to the heaven, he had to go and he wouldn't have asked the same thing later. So, we don't want the fulfillment of our material desires. But if we have, if we're going to ask for material desires, we should ask Krishna. That's the, because he'll give them to us in such a way that we won't want any more. Okay. Yes, Paul.
The miracles usually described as being in the morning of the movies. So those activities of being excavated and governed and being proud and should describe the resembling more ignorance rather. So how to reconcile this that I was imagining that the bodies of the demigods, the ethereal subtle bodies, and they are more kind of devoted to, of course they can fall down like Indra thinking themselves with the supreme independent, but this probably rather is like a moral passion, but ignorance will be intoxicated grossly.
But it's not just gross the way we, it's not going into the local pub in England or Australia and drinking some horrible things. This is, they were drinking, what was Madhvi and Varuni. So it wasn't ordinary things, and it was in the, in an exalted place. So it's, when they do things, it's hard to understand their consciousness. It's different than ours. If I were to do something, it would be in a different consciousness than theirs. But yet, one would have to say that they were, that they were influenced by the lower modes of material nature. We think of demigods when they're acting properly in Krishna's service, of being tending towards the mode of goodness, but they also very much tend towards the mode of passion, because there's sakam devotees. And these weren't demigods, they were the sons of demigods. So something contaminated their consciousness, and they wanted to just be irresponsible, basically, that's what it seems. And therefore, and this is the problem with passion, is it tends to, it leads to ignorance. Goodness tends to lead to passion, and passion tends to lead to ignorance. This is the nature of the material world. It tends to push one down.
Even in a body mind of goodness, you can just go forward. You're saying it's not like us,
but still, it's something. There's some parallels in there, isn't there? I mean, they're not the only examples of demigods who had trouble. They're always Brihaspati, Brihaspati's wife, and Indra, and Ariyama, and Indra afraid of his position all the time, cursing, this, that. So they're playing with the material energy. And once one is in contact with the material energy, it's always very dangerous, because the modes of material nature upset us, turn us upside down. But if we have the shelter of the internal energy, then there's no more fear. Apituyata darshan, everything is insignificant on the material level. So that's the conclusion. There is no secure position on the material level with the modes of material nature active. Dangerous. Padam, padam, yadvi padam. But their fortune is they had Narada Muni. That is Surishina, Devarishi. So, extraordinary.
Why did he give them this mercy? Just out of causeless desire to benefit some? I mean, there are so many people around, you see, drunken and doing all kinds of things.
He doesn't go to the pubs. He goes to the heavenly planets only. He leaves that service for us. More suitable. Okay, let's stop now.